For individuals, madness is a rare phenomenon. It is accidental. But mobs, madness is the rule for mobs. All the crimes that have been committed by the crowds are so much. Individuals have committed only few crimes here and there. Remember it, a robopath lives through the crowd so that he cannot be bothered by any responsibility. He can always say they. He can drop his eye into the they. He can lose himself into the crowd, become faceless, anonymous. Nobody can catch hold of him that you are responsible. The robopath lives in image involvement. He is always concerned how his image is going on, what people are thinking about him, whether they think him good, saintly, this and that. He is not worried really to transform his life. If people believe in stupid things, he will follow them. You can go and see. If the people believe that fasting is good, you will find few stupid people fasting. Because only through fasting, they become saints. If people believe that killing oneself is spiritual, you will find people killing themselves. In Jainism, suicide is permitted. If somebody wants to kill himself, he is allowed. And he becomes a great saint. Why? Because they say the world is just sin. The man who wants to get out of this world fast and soon is a great saint. Many people have committed that. You can look into religious traditions and you will find in Soviet Russia before the revolution there was a great Christian sect. They used to cut their genital organs. That was a religious thing. Thousands of people will do that. Women will cut their breasts. And it was thought to be a great virtue. There have been many sects who used to whip themselves. And the idea was that one who whips himself every morning is a great saint. And the who is greater was to be decided how many times he whips himself in a day. Stupid, neurotic things, but they have happened. They still go on happening. I have heard a disciple died and went to purgatory. There he ran into his guru, who was accompanied by a luscious young blonde. "I am happy for you, master," said the new arrival. "At least you are getting a partial reward in this place while you expiate your sins." "She is not my reward. She is not my reward," sighed the guru. "I am her punishment." Your so-called sins can only be used for that, for punishments. Ugly people, destructive people, stupid people. either masochistic or sadistic, but in every way pathological. But their whole idea is of how to have a good image in the eyes of others. That's all. If they think a man standing on his head is a great saint, they will stand on their heads. Through public opinion, they live. They live through the ideal. They live for the image. They don't have any inner direction. They have no interior definition of their behavior. They are decided by others. Public opinion is the ultimate deciding factor. Their behavior is thus dominated by image or status requirements set by the surrounding society. Watch these characteristics in you and in others. Robopaths are idealists. They are never realists. Reality they avoid. They have great ideals in their mind. How men should be. They never listen to the fact how man is. Should is far more important for them than is. And is real and should is just imagination. They live in the art. And they have impossible ideals in their minds, which cannot be fulfilled, which are inhuman. But they try to fulfill them. And in that very effort, they start becoming more and more harsh, more and more dead. A robopath is always a perfectionist. He is never satisfied. He will always be finding faults. He will try to be as faultless as possible. And he will look always into others' faults. Now, if you want to be faultless, you cannot be original. With the original comes the error. If you want to do something new, you have to accept that sometimes you may commit mistakes. If you want to be faultless, you have to be a very small routine. So many times repeated that it has become absolutely rigid and you can do it perfectly. That's why many people live at the minimum. They cannot go to the maximum. The minimum, they can remain perfect. With the maximum is the danger. The error may enter in. People live a very limited kind of life. They choose a small life. And life has to be multidimensional. Only then it is rich. A robopath is really poor. He may have as much wealth as one can have, but he is poor. His life is one-dimensional. He always lives to the minimum, close to the minimum. Do as few things as possible, because then you remain more perfect. If you do many more things, naturally, you can't be perfect. A real man is rich. He commits many errors. Of course, he never commits the same error twice. But he always goes on new adventures, seeking and searching for the new. He is ready to go astray. The perfectionist is not ready to go astray. He cannot learn, because learning creates trouble. That's why you see children can learn so much, grown-ups cannot. Grown-ups become perfectionists. They become robopaths. Children are still not trained up for it. They are ready to learn. And children learn fast. Psychologists have come to observe that a child learns in 7 years as much as he will learn in his whole life. 50% of his whole life is learned by the age one is 7. If you are going to live for 70 years more, you will learn only 50%. This seems to be a sheer wastage of life. But why the child is so much ready to learn? He is ready to commit mistakes. He is not worried about the image. He can try. If he fails, he is ready to fail. A person who is not ready to fail will never try. A robopath is necessarily anti-joy, anti-life. Not only that he is anti-joy, he is a joy killer. If somebody else is celebrating, he will look with eyes of condemnation. If somebody is singing and dancing, he will look as if somebody is committing a sin, a grave sin. He cannot accept laughter. Laughter looks to him like a sacrilege. He wants everybody to be serious and long faces. He wants everybody to be miserably serious. That is his idea of a grown-up man. This is not the grown-up man. This is really a pathological state, ill. A real man has the capacity to laugh as much as the capacity to cry. The real man has the capacity to be happy and to be miserable. His misery also has a certain life. These robopaths are miserable, but even their misery is dull and dead and mechanical. Even in their misery, there is no throb. Remember this and avoid any ideas that make you anti-life. Father Sullivan was terribly overworked and confided to a psychiatrist that he felt on the verge of a nervous breakdown. "What you need," said the doctor, "is to break completely with your everyday life, put on a business suit, and spend an evening in a topless nightclub." That night, with some misgiving, the priest followed this advice. He sat in the darkest corner of the club until a passing waitress stopped at his table. "Why, hello, father," she said. How did you know I was a priest?" asked the clergyman. "Don't you recognize me, father?" smiled the girl. "I am Sister Natalie. How is our shrink?" The same psychoanalyst has sent them both. She says, "How is our shrink?" One of the greatest problems before therapists is how to help people to become again more life-loving, life-affirmative. Because when you affirm life, you are relaxed. When you start enjoying life, you start becoming alive. Again your feet has a dance, and again your heart has a song. Again things start happening. People come to me, these anti-life people, they say, "What kind of ashram is this? People dancing, singing, men, women holding hands. What kind of ashram is this?" Their problem I can understand. They may have gone to Vinoba's ashram, आटू शिवानंदास आश्रम. आश्रम्स हैव एग्जिस्टेड इन इंडिया फॉर सेंचुरीज. लाइफ निगेटिव आश्रमास वेयर ओनली डल एंड डेड पीपल गैदर टूगैदर ओल्ड ऑन द वर्ज ऑफ डेथ टायर्ड बोर्ड फिनिश्ड जस्ट समहाउ पुलिंग अगेंस्ट लाइफ अगेंस्ट एवरी काइंड ऑफ सेलिब्रेशन. So they have a certain idea about ashram, that an ashram has to look serious. They have a certain idea about ashram, that the ashram has to look like a hospital. This is not a hospital. This is not for dull and dead people. This is not a cemetery. This is not a graveyard. This is a temple where we celebrate. Where we celebrate the very fact that God has given us birth. And through celebration we grow. Where we are tremendously grateful for these few utterly precious moments that God has given to us. For this barka, for this prasad, what can we do except thanking God through dance, through singing, through being more loving? God has showered so much love on us. What can we do in return? How can we pay the debt? We can shower this love on other human beings, on trees, on birds, on animals, on the world. Whatsoever God has given to us, we have to give and share. The robopath has no compassion. He is hard. He is hard on himself, he is hard on others. And sometimes when robopathology goes to its very extreme, it is not only that he has no compassion. It is not only that he lacks compassion. He becomes a compassionate. That value simply disappears. They are neither compassionate nor compassionate. That value simply does not exist for them. They only do their role properly, of course. They follow orders blindly, of course. Their great value is efficiency. Their enactments are generally neither against other people nor for other people in terms of a sense of personal moral value or principles. They act essentially in terms of what is most expedient behavior to further or confirm with their expected status or image in the social system. That's what the people who served Adolf Hitler said in the court, that they were simply following orders, they are not responsible. Their only duty was to obey. And they did their work as efficiently as possible. They were not concerned what the work was. The man who dropped atom bomb on Hiroshima was asked the next day, next morning by journalists, how he felt. He said, there is nothing to feel. I dropped the bomb. I fulfilled my duty. Then I ate my dinner and I went to sleep and I had a perfect sleep. Now, what kind of man is this? One 100,000 people have died by his bomb, by his act. 100,000 people. And he could sleep the whole night perfectly well, without even a nightmare disturbing him. What kind of man is he? And he could eat his dinner. on that night. But try to understand, he is the perfect robopath. He says, I did my duty. As you do your duty, you go to the office and you do your duty. If you are a clerk and you have to issue an order for somebody to be crucified, sentenced to death, you don't feel anything. You simply type the order, you send it to the right person to sign. You come back home, you take your dinner, you love your wife, you talk to your children, you see the TV and you go to sleep. This is none of your concern. The same was the answer of the German officials who followed such orders that it seems impossible how a human mind can do that. How a human being can do that? Burning thousands of Jews. But they did it perfectly and they did it efficiently. Just the other day I was telling in Darshan, one Indian died. He used to live in Germany. When he died, he went to hell. And the devil asked him, what hell you would like to choose? You can have either Indian or German, because you are born an Indian and you lived in Germany. So this alternative is possible. You can choose any. The Indian was surprised. He said, I had never thought that there are different kind of hells. But what is the difference? Are punishments different? The devil laughed. He said, no. The punishments are exactly the same. The same fire is waiting for you. And every torture. Then the Indian was even more puzzled. He said, then what is the difference? And the devil said, of course there is a difference. Things are done with German efficiency in the German hell. With German accuracy, precision, perfection. And of course the Indian hell is Indian hell. The Indian jumped. He said, I want to go to the Indian hell. Because sometimes the fire may not burn. Sometimes the man who puts the fire on may not turn up. Indian hell is going to be Indian. So if you have any choice, sometime choose the Indian. The robopath has no compassion. He has no feeling. He has no heart. The robopath lives in constant hostility because he goes on repressing anger, hatred, every kind of emotion he goes on repressing. He goes on repressing all the negative kinds of emotions. Then by and by a moment comes of such accumulated anger that he is simply angry, not at anyone in particular. He is just angry. He becomes antagonistic to everybody. And he has no reason, just an antagonism. It seeps into his blood and bones. It becomes part of his marrow. People unable to act out their spontaneity and creativity develop repressed, venomous pockets of hostility. They become hard, thick and dense. Never repress, otherwise you are on the path to become a robopath. Robopaths are self-righteous. They are always feeling holier than thou. Their whole effort is how to look holier than others. How to be at the top. Their ego is very subtle. These people become saints, mahatmas, and all kinds of all kinds of neuroses are born in them. These people become politicians, puritans, moralists. They are ready to throw the whole world into hell. These are the people who have invented hell. And the last thing that a robopath is alienation. The robopath is alienated from self, from other selves, and from nature. He is alienated from self in the sense that his ego is only a function of ritualistic demands. It has no intrinsic self-definition. He does not know who he is. He knows only what others say about him. So he is alienated from himself. He has never encountered his own self. He has never looked into his own being. He has always been looking into other people's eyes and looking for his image, how he looks in other people's eyes. He has never come home. He is alienated with his self. He is alienated with other selves. Because others don't exist for him as persons. Others exist as things. His world is the world of I, it. It is not the world of I, thou. He never calls anybody thou. He never falls in love. He never melts his ego into somebody else's being. He never comes so close to overlap anybody. He remains aloof, distant. He remains higher than others. And in small things, he will not smoke, he will not drink, he will not eat this and that. And in these small things, he will pose that he is a saint. Just by not smoking, can you become a saint? So cheap. Just by not smoking. Just by not drinking, you can become a saint. Just by becoming a vegetarian, you can become a saint. I am not saying that don't be vegetarians, and I am not saying that go on smoking and drinking. What I am saying is that these things don't make a saint. People who go on smoking and drinking and eating anything whatsoever with no compassion in their heart are just stupid people. Those who don't do such stupid things are intelligent people, but not saints. To smoke, to drink may be a mistake against your body, but it is not a sin. But these robopaths, they will make it a sin, because this makes them very, very easy to become saints. They can always say, I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't eat meat, I don't do this and I don't do that. And immediately they are on a higher pedestal. And naturally, when you are not in tune with yourself and with other people, how can you be in tune with nature? These robopaths have been destroying the nature. They are the enemies of ecology. They go on destroying nature. They have wiped almost half of the nature from the earth. They are very destructive people. They are destructive of themselves, of others, of nature. How can they know God? How can they feel God? They have not even felt a rose flower. They have not even felt the cry of a cuckoo. They have not even felt the river passing by. They have not felt the child is smiling. And they have not seen a woman's tears. They have not even felt their own existence. This creates alienation. They are alienated from other people because their interaction is usually in terms of others as objects, not human beings. They are role objects, like servants, bosses, employees, employers, doctors, patients, etc. When a doctor comes to see a patient, he is not interested in the patient as a person, just the role that he is a patient. And the patient is not interested in the doctor as a person, but the role, the doctor, the wife, the husband, the son, the father, the mother, all roles, people are not interested in each other's person, in each other's living reality. This is the robopathology that man has lived up to now. And man can go on living into it. You can jump out of it. That jump makes you religious. That jump brings you to understanding. That jump makes you wise. That jump makes you enlightened. Now, this is a small story. Najrani said, if you say that you can nearly understand, you are talking nonsense. A theologian who liked this phrase asked, can you give us an equivalent of this in ordinary life? Certainly, said Najrani, it is equivalent to saying that something is almost a circle. There are people who think they can understand, may not be perfectly, but they can understand approximately. This is not possible. Understanding is not gradual. Understanding is a sudden flash. Understanding is always total. It is never partial. It is not that you can have it in little chunks, in little bits and pieces. No, understanding is not accumulative. Understanding cannot be divided into parts. When it comes as a totality. Either it is or it is not. Either you are awake or you are asleep. Either you are enlightened or you are a robopath. From robopathology to enlightenment, there is a quantum leap, a jump. But the robopath believes he may not be so enlightened as Buddha, but he is also a little bit enlightened. That belief helps him to keep going sleeping. Yes, he may not be such a great meditator, but a little bit of meditation he is also doing. He may not have known God, but few glimpses he has. This is not possible. Najrani's statement is of tremendous importance. If you say you can nearly understand, you are talking nonsense. There is no way to have a nearly understanding state of mind. Nobody can know truth approximately. An approximate truth is still a lie. It is as if you are heating water. 90 degrees, it is still water. 95 degrees, it is still water. 99 degrees, it is still water. You cannot say that it is less water now. It is still the same water. Heated, but the same water. 100 degrees, and suddenly there is a jump. The water evaporates. It is a quantum leap, discontinuous. It is not that first the water becomes a little bit of vapor, and then a little bit more, and then a little bit more. No. At one point it was still water, coming closer and closer to 100 degrees. 99.9, it was still water. And then in a split second, it is no more water. It has become vapor. In fact, to say in a split second is not right. It happens in no time. That moment is almost timeless. When I say timeless, I exactly mean it. No time passes. It is sudden. That is the meaning of a quantum leap. Either you understand or you don't. So be clear about it. Understanding is indivisible. It is not possible to divide it. You cannot have little or more of it. Preparation for it is gradual, but the happening of it is a sudden happening, like lightning. One moment all was dark, another moment all is light, like that. Understanding has no continuity with non-understanding. It is discontinuous. That's why I say to you that by accumulating knowledge, you will not become wise. Knowledge can be accumulated. You can be less of a knower or more of a knower. You can go on accumulating knowledge. You can become more and more of a knower. But wisdom is non-accumulative. It is radical. It is a revolution. It is an explosion. From the known into the unknown. From the visible into the invisible. From the material into the spiritual. From the temporary into the non-temporal. From time into eternity. From robopathology into enlightenment. It is a 180-degree turn, and without taking any time, because time brings degrees gradualness. The moment of enlightenment is a timeless moment. We should not call it even a moment, because it is not. But we have to call it because of linguistic limitations. Knowledge is one thing. Understanding is totally another. Understanding is as much free of knowledge as ignorance. It is more similar to ignorance than knowledge. It is as empty as ignorance. But in ignorance there is a hankering for knowledge. In enlightenment there is no more any hankering. That is the only difference. The ignorant person will become knowledgeable sooner or later, because there is a hankering. He wants to have knowledge. He suffers because of his ignorance. He feels hurt that he does not know. He wants to know. The man of enlightenment has come to know that there is no way to know. That the mystery is absolute. That the desire to know is meaningless. Nothing can be known. Not a thing is ever known. In that moment he becomes innocent. Ignorance is no more there, because ignorance can only be there if you hanker for knowledge. Only the desire for knowledge creates the idea of ignorance. When the desire for knowledge has disappeared is with ignorance too. One is absolutely empty of ignorance and knowledge both. One is in utter silence. Ah! All has stopped. All has disappeared. And for the first time, there is consciousness, total consciousness. That total consciousness is what Najrani means by understanding. That's why he says you cannot have approximate understanding. A theologian who liked this phrase asked, theologians are always people hankering for more knowledge. He said, can you give us an equivalent of this in ordinary life? Certainly, said Najrani, it is equivalent to saying that something is almost a circle. A circle is either a circle or is not a circle. You cannot have a half circle. The half circle is not circle at all. It is only an arc. It is only a curve. It is not circle. Circle is circle only when it is complete. The very idea of circle has in it intrinsic completion. Only a complete circle is circle, and only absolute understanding is understanding. That's why there is no way to compare Buddha, Muhammad, Mansur, Christ, Lao Tzu, Zarathustra. There is no way. You cannot compare. They are all circles and all are complete. You cannot say that Buddha is more of a circle than Zarathustra, or Zarathustra is more of a circle than Lao Tzu. You cannot use the word more and less as far as enlightenment is concerned. Enlightenment is never more nor less. People come to me and sometimes they ask, who is more enlightened, Buddha or Mahavira? They are asking an absolutely stupid question. Nobody is more enlightened. One is enlightened when more and less all have disappeared. One is enlightened when all comparison have disappeared. One is enlightened when one has disappeared. How two absences can be more or less? When I am not in the room, and when you are not in the room, can my absence be more than your absence? When I am not in the room is empty as much as when you are not in the room. It can't be that when I am not in the room, it is more empty, and when you are not in the room, it is less empty. Absences cannot be more or less. Egos can be more or less. Egolessness cannot be more or less. Remember it. It is a tremendously important statement. Understanding is a lightning. You can prepare for it, but while you are preparing, you remain ignorant. You go on remaining ignorant to the very last moment. And then suddenly, all has disappeared. And it happens without any process, without any time passing by. It is utterly timeless. So the last thing. Remember, there have been two schools all over the world. One school teaches gradual growth. Another school teaches sudden enlightenment. And both are right. Because those who teach gradual growth, they are talking only about preparation, heating the water. And those who are talking about sudden enlightenment, they are talking about the last thing, when the water has come to 100 degrees. Both are right, and there is no conflict, and there is no need to create any conflict. They are absolutely right, and both are right, and both are together right. One's emphasis is on the preparation. That too is true. Because what is the point of talking about the sudden enlightenment if you are not prepared? If you are cold, below 0 degree, what is the point of talking about evaporation? First get heated. Become at least warm. Start moving towards the 100 degree point. So those who talk about gradual growth, they mean simply that preparation will have to be gradual. And those who talk about sudden enlightenment, they are talking about the ultimate thing. They say, what to talk about the gradual growth? That's okay. That is accepted, taken for granted. The real thing to talk about is the ultimate. When it happens in a total way. It simply wipes you out completely. You disappear, and then there is understanding. Najrani said this to the theologian, because the theologian are the people who belong to the world of knowledge, always think of accumulation, of having more knowledge, having more virtue, having more this and that, but their mind is always greedy. They think in terms of degrees. Mind functions in terms of degrees, and understanding is a state of no mind. I have talked to you about robopathology long for a certain reason, because that is where you are. And unless you get out of your robopathology, you will never know that benediction called understanding, enlightenment, nirvana. Enough for today.